Baghdad underlined the importance of steadfastness in the face of all Western plots and pressure in order to achieve victory.
We discussed bilateral relations, the situation in Syria and Iran, as well as mutual challenges. The steadfastness of Syria and Iran, as well as all those who want to achieve justice, freedom, sovereignty and independence in our world, will lead them to victory over terrorism and those who question our capability to face challenges.
Abdullahian concluded his meetings by holding talks with heads of Syria-based Palestinian factions, renewing Iran's support for Palestinians' struggle and their fight for their legitimate rights.
Mr. Abdullahian's visit comes shortly after the formation of the new cabinet in Iran. The visit is a reiteration of Iran's steadfast stance towards Syria, based on support to the government and people in the fight on terror and for rebuilding the country. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
In a press conference, Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip declared the return of nighttime protests, also known as night confusion operations along the buffer zone, to reject the Israeli blockade on the enclave.
It is time to end this crippling siege completely. We gave the mediators many chances to end this siege, and there are no more chances for any delay. Our people have got enough of the suffering. We will not leave our positions and won't stop the confrontation until Israel ends the blockade. Israeli settlers nearby won't witness peace as long as our people are not living in peace. We won't stay silent over the misery our people live in.
Palestinian protesters staged a demonstration near the buffer zone, burning tires and launching incendiary balloons at the Israeli army. The demonstrators were voicing their anger at the deteriorating quality of life in the Gaza Strip, caused by a crippling Israeli blockade since 2007. On Saturday, 13-year-old Omar Hassan Abu Nil died of injuries after being shot by the Israeli soldiers during an anti-Israeli protest held a week before.
If the Israeli regime keeps committing these crimes against our people, we will continue the fight and confront the regime here. Israel should know that we are only fighting for our right to live a decent life. This is our land and we won't leave it, no matter the cost.
Palestinian Resistance Front says it will escalate clashes with Israel as long as the regime keeps its suffocating siege on Gaza, hampering life in the impoverished enclave. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
State security forces on standby in Washington, D.C. were activated today as Palestinians marched toward the White House to condemn the first meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. That summit was ultimately postponed after a series of bombing attacks in Afghanistan, but protesters were quickly driven out of Lafayette Park regardless. They denounced not just the heavy-handed police tactics, but also President Biden's decision to host Bennett and his refusal to hold Israel accountable for its crimes against Palestinian people.
You're really violating our constitutional rights. To express ourselves in front of the administration, to the administration, and you're just using your power to ask us to.
Let us say that we're here to condemn this visit by this war criminal, the new Israeli Prime Minister, Bennett. He's calling for a war with Iran. He wants a new war against the Gaza Strip. He's not here with a proposal to give the Palestinians their rights.
In a symbolic move, the protesters made their way to the Willard Hotel, where the Israeli Prime Minister is staying, and read aloud the names and ages of Palestinians recently killed by the regime.
Mira Rami Abulah, 12. Yadan Rami Abulah, 13. Amir Rami Abulah, 9.
With Israel stepping up its economic and military siege on the Gaza Strip once again, activists all over the world have renewed their efforts to mobilize for Palestinian liberation. But many say it's right here in D.C. that Israel's real base of power lies.
The police aren't letting demonstrators anywhere near the White House. They are keeping Palestinians and their supporters at least two blocks away, but that has not kept organizers from staying on the move. They say they won't stop until the Biden administration stops being complicit in Israeli war crimes. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
The holiday season has ended, but the protests against the mandatory health pass are continuing. Only in Paris, three different marches took place, dozens all over France. The health pass is an electronic document that people have to show before entering public places. Medical figures show that in areas with more than 70% of people vaccinated, the transmission of the virus and the death qualities are very low. But many people continue to protest because they do not trust the government discourse.
I absolutely don't believe in what they say. We are facing dishonest people, liars. These people want to suppress our liberties and control us.
For me, there is something fishy going on here. I do not have any trust in this vaccine.
But medical figures seem to show the opposite. Today, end of August, 65% of the French population has received two jabs of the anti-COVID vaccine. The French health minister, Olivier Véran, himself a neurologist, administered an injection in front of the cameras. He said that people should fear the virus, not the vaccine. French officials say that the COVID crisis is getting under control thanks to the accelerated vaccination campaign and some mandatory measures. In French overseas territories, however, like Martinique, La Réunion or Guadeloupe, the situation is getting out of control because less than 30% of the people there are vaccinated. COVID infections and death casualties are high. Hospitals are full and the lockdown and curfew have been extended. Today, more than 90% of people who arrive in hospitals with severe symptoms of the COVID virus or who die from the virus are non-vaccinated persons. But the mistrust in the vaccine remains high.
Why do they force me to be injected with an unknown product, a pseudo-experimental vaccine? Normally, a vaccine is first tested on animals, then on volunteers. Today, the government threatens and blackmails an entire population. Restaurant workers and health personnel can be fired.
Hospital workers are now obliged to be vaccinated or have to show a negative PCR test. If not, they will be suspended without salary. Most of the protesters do not deny that the vaccination campaign in France seems to be successful, but they would like the French government to use the method of persuasion rather than restriction. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
In the limelight.
A new analysis from finance firm Goldman Sachs finds that if U.S. Congress doesn't act soon to pass an eviction moratorium, 750,000 households could face eviction in the fall and winter. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Sharon Zhang, journalist. This article is published under the heading 750,000 U.S. households may face eviction if Congress doesn't act, says Goldman Sachs. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. A new analysis from finance firm Goldman Sachs finds that if Congress doesn't act soon to pass an eviction moratorium, 750,000 households could face eviction in the fall and winter. The investment bank estimates that between 2.5 and 3.5 million people in the U.S. are significantly behind on rent, which collectively adds up to an estimated $12 billion to $17 billion. The Goldman Sachs estimate is more conservative than a Census Bureau estimate from last week that said about 1.3 million people could be facing eviction within just the next 2 months. Still, both of those estimates should serve as a wake-up call for Congress, which has dragged its feet and refused to pass an eviction moratorium, even as hundreds of thousands of families are threatened with imminent homelessness and destabilization. Part of the reason for the multi-billion dollar rent debt is due to the failure of state governments to distribute tens of billions of dollars in rental aid given to them by the federal government. Lawmakers approved for the $6.5 billion to be disbursed to states to help residents with rent payments during the pandemic, but only about 11% of it has been distributed as of last week. Of about 2.8 million households that applied for rental assistance, the New York Times reported recently only about 500,000 have reported receiving funds and 700,000 applications have been rejected. Many renters who are behind on rent payments, meanwhile, haven't applied for the program. This could be due to states not publicizing the rental assistance or creating complicated application system for renters. Conservative justices in the Supreme Court recently shut down the Biden administration's latest eviction moratorium extension, which was spared by progressive lawmaker Representative Cori Bush. The justices cruelly argued that the eviction moratorium couldn't be upheld because it could be a slippery slope to other government assistance programs like food and internet aid. The moratorium was set to protect renters until October, but the Supreme Court decision has put a huge swath of renters at risk of immediate eviction. If Congress fails to pass another eviction moratorium, the country could be facing a wave of mass evictions, advocates have warned. While the evictions could have a small impact on the economy, Goldman Sachs writes, the implications for COVID infections and public health are probably more severe. Indeed, part of the reason for the eviction moratorium is to help stem community spread of COVID-19. More importantly, however, the eviction moratorium has helped prevent 1.55 million evictions, the Biden administration estimated in July. Evictions have an enormous psychological and financial impact on people and are a major contributor to homelessness. Recently, over 60 House Democrats signed a letter to the Democratic leadership pleading for them to bring to a vote and pass a new eviction moratorium, codifying it into law. Led by progressive lawmakers, Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cori Bush, Ayanna Pressley, and others, the letter argues that the legislation is crucial to help Americans survive the pandemic and beyond. The letter writers said, millions of people who are currently at risk for eviction, housing insecurity, or face becoming unhoused desperately look to their elected representatives to implement legislation that will put their health and safety first and save lives. They face long odds of passing a moratorium through Congress, however. Democrats in the House shut down the idea in July, just before the moratorium was about to end for the first time. It's unclear whether or not there would be more support this time, as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi pointed out at the time. The Democrats had only a couple of days to draft and pass the legislation before it expired, with little notice from the administration. The Democrats are also up against real estate firms that have poured millions into lobbying to stop the eviction moratorium. The lobbying against the moratorium has not stopped, despite the fact that many of these real estate groups have reported solid earnings this year.
It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd.
Islamic laws.
Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats the enchanting whisper.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And our guest speaker, as always, Sheikh Javid. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program again.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Well, the concept and the topic that we are going to delve into related to the Islamic laws issued by Ayatollah Sistani is mourning. And that is the mourning for Imam Hussein and Muharram. And this is actually a good platform for me and the whole crew here from the IRIB English Radio to express our condolences to everybody who's listening to us, to our dear audiences. And inshallah, we hope that this program would come to good use. Let's take a listen to a short biography of Ayatollah Sistani, and then we'll be back.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of five, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ashraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazwini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in Fiqh and Usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Javid, we are talking about the laws related to mourning to commemorate Imam Hussein's martyrdom during Muharram, according to Ayatollah Sistani. Let me start off this episode with this question. Is it permissible to borrow money to hold mourning ceremonies or to give a vows and nazr to, or to go to Karbala, for example, based on the money you earn? Some people are so much fond of the mourning ceremonies for Imam Hussein or the pure household of the Holy Prophet, all of the Imams. They are so much interested in fact, giving out, food, for example, for such ceremonies. That's why, even if they don't have the money, they are short of the money, they go to the bank to take out some loans or to borrow some money from their friends and family members to, in fact, fulfill their desires to mourn for Imam Hussein. Is it permissible to do such a thing, even if one is doubting or is or may be unable to repay their debts?
Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, according to Ayatollah Sistani, it is permissible to borrow money to hold a mourning ceremony to lament the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him and his family. And it's also permissible to borrow money to give food to the mourners, to give, let's say, to render some services on the day of Ashura, okay? Like, for example, giving water to people who are thirsty. And such practices are allowed even if one has to borrow money from other people. But we should note that in some cases it may not be permissible when, for example, when a person is already indebted to other people, when someone is unable to repay it, because repaying the loan is obligatory and you have to return the money, the thing that you have borrowed, to the person who, to your creditor. And if you know for sure that you are not going to be able to return the money or to pay the money on time, then you should not borrow such money in the first place, because it will lead to degradation, it will lead to humiliation, and it will lead to some kind of, let's say, bad reputation, okay? Because if you don't pay the money, other people, the creditor, first of all, will probably object to you. Your reputation as a good person, as an honorable person, will be damaged in the vicinity, you live. So it's very much important for a person to maintain his reputation as a good person, as an honest person. And if this reputation is damaged, then of course he will cease to be a credible person in the eye of people. He will cease to be an honest person, a faithful person, you know, a trustworthy person. So if you lose your trust in the in the community where you live, you will not be able to interact with other people. So these, you know, these consequences have to be taken into consideration. Generally speaking, it is permissible to borrow money for such purposes.
I see. Okay. Let's take a short break and we'll be back continuing our discussion on the laws according to Ayatollah Sistani related to mourning and lamentation for Imam Hussein's martyrdom anniversary. Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. We are still talking about the laws issued by Ayatollah Sistani about mourning and azadari and lamentation for Imam Hussein's martyrdom anniversary. Well, during Muharram or even some special occasions like Ashura and Tasua. Well, Sheikh Javid, we all know that, you know, some of the minaras and the towers of the mosques, in fact, you know, through the loudspeakers or using the loudspeakers, you know, play the recitation of the Holy Quran before azan, the call to prayer. And also for morning ceremonies, they also play or they turn on their loudspeakers there on their mosque buildings or towers and minaras, and they play it out to the neighbor, whatever goes on inside the mosque. I'm talking about the morning ceremonies, all right?
Yeah.
And this they do because of the season of the commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. And we have sometimes complaints from the neighborhood, and the neighborhood will grumble and complain about the loud noise, all right, coming out of these loud speakers. So although the sound is loud, it's noisy and it's troublesome and a nuisance to the neighborhood, the people who play such, you know, mourning through the loudspeakers are very much adamant to carry out what they do. What is the Islamic law? What is the ruling according to Ayatollah Sistani about this?
Well, we know that in some Sunni-dominated or Sunni-predominantly populated, let's say, countries,
mm-hmm.
or even in non-Muslim countries, there are people who do not believe in such practices. They do not believe in commemorating the event of Ashura. They live in the immediate neighborhood of the Husayniyas or the places where the mourning ceremonies are held. And of course, according to Ayatollah Sistani, it is not permissible to hurt or to create disturbances for such people who do not, let's say, who are not Shias, okay? Okay, if you are living in a country where, or in a city or in a neighborhood where all the people are Shia, they somehow, they are in terms with the situation, and they know that Azadari is will continue for 10 days during the month. Of course, they are not going to object, and they will not consider it as a kind of disturbance. But in many other countries, like, for example, the predominantly Sunni-populated countries or in non-Muslim countries, we must be very careful not to disturb them and not to create a problem for those people. We must turn in the loudspeakers and listen to the lecturer or to the eulogists within the mosque without allowing the sound, the voice, and the sound to
troubling other people.
To trouble other people in the neighborhood, okay? Because it will have a negative impact. And instead of serving that purpose, the purpose of preaching Islam, commemorating Islam, and mm-hmm. inviting other people to goodness and to justice, we might even, cause them to distance themselves from the religion.
What about the recitation of the Quran?
The same is the case the recitation. We must be careful. Where it depends from place to place, from town to town. You know, if it were in Iran, no one is going to object to you.
Yes.
Okay, or if it were, let's say, even in some cities of Pakistan, since I have been there, no one is going to object to you because everyone plays the Quran using loudspeakers on their minarets.
Mm-hmm, I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Once again, I use this opportunity to express our heartfelt condolences to our dear audiences, and may God accept all of our mourning and azadari for Imam Hussein and their pure household. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you breathe. would it take every step that you would make? Purpose and guidance it gave mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hossein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hossein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new land.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
on the news line.
Hundreds of Palestinians have staged protests against the Israeli regime's inhumane blockade of the Gaza Strip, burning tires and hurling explosive devices toward the fence between Gaza and the occupied territories for several consecutive nights. The Israeli military, which deployed additional troops along the fence ahead of the night protests, used live fire, tear gas, and stun grenades against Palestinian protesters. Several Palestinians have been injured by Israeli forces east of the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Health Ministry's spokesman, Ashraf Al-Kedra, said several others were hurt from tear gas canisters fired at them. During Saturday night's protests alone, 11 Palestinians were injured by live fire and other aggressive measures used by Israeli forces.
I mean, it's because the laws are not being implemented, they're not being penalized, they're not being punished for all these, violations of all these laws. So they feel like they have a green light to commit more crimes and more crimes. And this becomes a natural system for the Zionists. The Zionists now, they think that they're above the law and no law is going to, stop them from committing any crime that they want to do. And that's why you can see that whenever we hear condemnations from countries or even the nation's assemblies, there's nothing really coming out of it at the end of the day.
Gazans have been organizing protests since last week. They're demanding that the crossings be reopened to facilitate the entry of goods and humanitarian aid. In a statement on Sunday, the resistance committees in Palestine announced that the protests will continue until the Israeli regime lifts its siege. The Palestinians say the Israeli regime's repeated attacks on the positions of the resistance in Gaza would not dissuade them from fighting for their freedom and dignity. Over the Israeli regime's tight blockade, which now includes deliberate hampering of efforts to reconstruct the strip following its latest war on Gaza. Back in May, the Israeli military bombarded the besieged Gaza Strip for 11 consecutive days, killing at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. The Gaza-based resistance groups fired around 4,000 rockets towards the Israeli-occupied territories during the 11-day war, forcing Tel Aviv to call for a ceasefire.
The only way it really works with this particular regime, and this illegitimate regime, the Zionist regime, is by righteous, unified resistance. And that's exactly what we want to see in Palestine.
Amid the ongoing confrontations, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Minister for Military Affairs Benny Gantz met in Ramallah on Sunday, marking the highest level meeting held between the two sides in over a decade. The two discussed issues related to diplomacy, economics, and civil affairs, according to a statement from Gantz's office.
You know, it's quite clear that the Zionist regime does not want peace and does not want to recognize the Palestinians because they had a chance many times. You can see that they're still stealing, areas in the West Bank, and that's obviously international law breaches. We can see now, Sheikh Jarrah, Sinwan, all these different areas, even in Jerusalem, in different areas, they're still, evicting, stealing people's homes in a very, very barbaric way.
The Palestinian resistance groups have pledged not to allow the Israeli regime to continue its aggression against the Palestinian people or change the rules of engagement.
Thousands of activists gathered nationwide to commemorate the 58th anniversary of Martin Luther King's Voting Equality March in Washington on Saturday. They protested against curbs to voting access in some Republican-led states that rights groups say disproportionately affect people of color. Many activists view the fight over voting rules as the civil rights issue of the era. In Washington, about 20,000 marchers held Black Lives Matter flags and signs and called on Congress to bolster voter rights. Other rallies were planned in Phoenix, Miami, and several other U.S. cities. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, a nonprofit public policy institute, for this year, at least 18 states have adopted a total of 30 restrictive election laws, with dozens of others under consideration. Those laws range from a requirement to have a fixed address in order to register the vote to a ban on the drive-through voting that was popular in some states last year amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The organizers of Saturday's protests denounced the legislation as racist, anti-democratic voter suppression laws and demanded that the U.S. Congress pass legislation to block such voting restrictions. In July, U.S. President Joe Biden admitted that the recent push in Republican-controlled states to restrict voting access is in contrast with fair and free elections.
There's an unfolding assault taking place in America today, an attempt to suppress and subvert the right to vote in fair and free elections.
The Democratic-controlled House of Representatives has passed two draft laws to limit voting restrictions. But in the closely divided Senate, Republicans have promised to block voting rights legislation. This is a sign of polarization in the U.S. Congress.
Well, I think you have to look at it in the context of the United States political sphere. I don't think voting or our system in the United States is particularly democratic from the very onset. You have to keep in mind that when the United States Constitution was first written, first ratified, you know, only white male property owners were able to vote or have any say in public discourse. And unfortunately, not too much has changed. You know, maybe there's a little bit more people of color, maybe there's a little bit more women, but the property owning part is largely still in effect, because you have the average income of elected officials at the federal level is so high. I don't think most people in the United States feel represented by their elected officials. I don't think they think our country is going in the right direction.
American society is plagued with racial discrimination and police brutality. According to various studies, African Americans are far more likely to be shot, arrested, and imprisoned by police than any other racial group, as they are twice as likely to die compared to their white counterparts. In addition, they are less likely to get vaccinated amid the variant spreads. On Saturday, thousands of people demonstrated in the U.S. Capitol, Washington, and in several cities across the country to demand voting rights protection.
Our country is backsliding to the unconscionable days of Jim Crow. And some of our senators are saying, well, we can't overcome the filibuster. Then I say to you today, get rid of the filibuster. That is the monument to slavery we must dismantle. That is the monument to white supremacy we must tear down.
I march because I'm tired of elected officials putting themselves first. To be honest, I am disgusted by the behavior of many of our leaders. In this country, it's easier to register to own a gun than it is to register to vote. Think about that. If you are a congressperson protecting firearms, why won't you protect the right to vote? That is completely unacceptable. I march because I want change, not just for me, but for everyone who comes next.
While some marchers carried posters supporting the end of the filibuster, others chanted about police violence toward black people, workers' rights, the Afghanistan withdrawal, and minimum wage. This is a clear message that voting rights were not the only issue in people's minds. A A top Iranian official has condemned U.S. President Joe Biden for what he called illegally threatening the Islamic Republic. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, said Biden's emphasis on using other options with regard to Iran's nuclear program establishes Tehran's right to reciprocate. The reaction followed a meeting between the U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett at the White House. During the meeting, Biden said he was putting diplomacy first on Iran's nuclear issue, but added he would be prepared to turn to other options. By diplomacy, the U.S. president was pointing to the talks in Vienna, Austria, to reinstate the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement, which was abandoned by former U.S. President Donald Trump in 2018. Biden also said he remains committed to ensuring that Iran never develops a nuclear weapon, while Iran has time and again rejected the accusation and stressed the fact that it seeks nuclear technology for peaceful purposes and not for developing weapons. Biden's threat of unspecific options came after Israel's Minister of Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, accused Iran of seeking a nuclear weapon. Gantz said military action should be considered as a plan B to prevent Tehran from accessing a nuclear warhead. That's while, unlike Iran, Israel is not a party to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, known as NPT, and is the only country in the region to have a nuclear arsenal. Israel's possession of nuclear warheads poses a significant threat to regional stability. The regime has carried a bombing campaign in Syria for the past years. It has threatened Iran militarily on numerous occasions and conducted sabotage attacks against the country. And when it comes to Hezbollah, Israel has repeatedly threatened to destroy the resistance group.
They can reach out and touch Iran anytime they feel like it. The question, of course, is what will Iran do if they are attacked? And that's what the Americans have to consider. And their Israeli masters.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said the current U.S. administration is not different from the former government of President Donald Trump, who abandoned an international nuclear deal and unleashed the most draconian sanctions on Iran. The leader also said, quote, "Behind the scenes of foreign policy, smile and self-righteous talk, America is a predatory wolf that sometimes turns into a cunning fox. An example is the current situation in Afghanistan." Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the U.S. has a nerve to behave in a way as if it was Iran which walked away from the nuclear deal. He also blasted France, Britain and Germany for failing to live up to their commitments under the deal. The leader said the trio's obstructionism in implementing the accord is no less than that of the U.S. The leader made the remarks in a meeting with President Ebrahim Raisi and his newly formed cabinet on Saturday.
So we've got basically more of the same. We've got the Trump administration with a different face that supposedly is kindlier and friendlier, but is actually just as opposed to Iran being a self-sufficient country with a functioning economy that helps its people. This is what the United States and Israel don't want.
U.S. President Joe Biden has said that rejoining the nuclear agreement is one of his top foreign policy priorities. But he has been refusing to take any steps to bring Washington back to compliance with the accord. The Biden administration has shown an unusual urge to maintain key elements of sanctions imposed by his predecessor as leverage to pressure the Islamic Republic. On the other hand, Iran says since the U.S. unilaterally left the accord in 2018, it must first fulfill the obligation by removing all sanctions in a verifiable manner. That is, Iran is able to see the effect of the removal of sanctions in practice.
On Thursday, the Afghan capital Kabul became the scene of carnage. Scores of people were killed after two bombs exploded in the crowd outside the international Kabul airport. The Pentagon, however, stated there was only one bomb attack. Over a dozen U.S. troops were confirmed to have been killed in the attack. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility. The blast came as hundreds of people were rushing to leave the Afghan capital prior to the August 31st deadline set by U.S. President Joe Biden to fully withdraw troops from the country. Intelligence reports had warned about the possibility of attacks on the airport by an offshoot of the Daesh terrorist group, which has fought against both foreign forces and the Taliban in Afghanistan since its formation in 2015. The U.S. president vowed revenge on the perpetrators, saying the evacuation efforts will continue regardless.
To those who carried out this attack, as well as anyone who wishes America harm, know this. We will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay.
Some, however, are questioning why the U.S. chose to withdraw from this Central Asian country at this point, and if it can continue its operations in Afghanistan without having a military base there.
I think that there are a couple of reasons. First of all, they might not have thought it was important. Secondly, they were probably preoccupied with getting out. Thirdly, I'm not sure that their intelligence is as good as they say. And I think that from their point of view, they had degraded Al-Qaeda to the point that they were satisfied with. They were not focused on Afghanistan.
The outcome of the United States' longest war has also raised questions about the success of foreign military presence in the country. More than 111,000 people have been flown out of Afghanistan since the Taliban swept to power on August 15th. The Taliban had allowed U.S.-led forces to conduct the airlift while planning to finalize their own government as soon as the American troops left. U.S. forces are racing to complete their withdrawal from Afghanistan by an August 31st deadline set by President Biden. His administration is facing growing criticism over the situation in Afghanistan and what is seen as a hasty withdrawal after two decades of military presence. Biden, however, says the U.S. has long ago achieved its original rationale for invading Afghanistan in 2001, to root out the Al-Qaeda militants and prevent a repeat of the September 11 attacks on the United States. He has noted that the aim of the war has never been nation-building, a statement in contrast to what U.S. officials used to say when the war began.
But the fundamental issue is that in many, many cases, it's not only Afghanistan, it's been Syria, it's been Iraq, it has been countries in Africa. We've intervened in South America. Basically, without any willingness on the United States' part to recognize the sovereignty of other countries. So unless we begin to deal with that, I don't think we're going to be particularly effective in dealing with groups that we conceive to be terrorists.
Over the past 20 years, the U.S. and its NATO allies maintained a military presence in Afghanistan with the stated aim of fighting terrorists. The recent incident at the Kabul airport was a clear indication that the mission was not accomplished.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. Please accept our condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali about the master of the martyrs, Sayyid al-Shuhada, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Stay tuned.
مجالس مجالسی است که صاحبشون خود اهل بیت.
The main hosts of the majalis for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam are the Ahlul Bayt themselves. I swear by Allah that we have nothing to protect the pure core of religion of Islam except the month of Muharram and the mourning ceremonies for the martyrdom of Abu Abdullah. These majalis,
will get us to the reappearance of Imam al-Mahdi Jalallah. This has always been the case during the history of Islam.
Karbala, as I step onto your sand, you capture my eyes. Karbala, I see heaven has been placed here beneath your sky.
این مجالسی که برای اهل بیت الان داریم میگیریم، الان داریم میگیریم. 40 سال پیش، 50 سال پیش، 100 سال پیش.
The majalis that we are holding for Imam al-Hussein and other members of the Ahl Bayt are new in their type and number today. Never during the history were the Muslims free to hold sessions for the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam as free as they are today. Thus, whatever the Shias learned about Islam and religion were because of the majalis of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and their gatherings during Muharram and the day of Ashura. Therefore, the main conductor of this majalis is Allah himself, and the members of the Ahlul Bayt are the main hosts.
Karbala, why do you hold such memories? Ashura, always full of mysteries. Ashura, always full of mysteries.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanallah.
Beginning, the season's tears are flowing. Our Imam, we are condoling. Our new year starts with morning. Muharram is a beginning. The season's tears are flowing. Our Imam, we are condoling. Karbala, what precious blood was spilled there? Ashura.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.